Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into the show. Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by Jacob Milham. He covers the Royals for Kings of Kauffman. It is the Royals' first off day, at least since opening day, and it's a good, we're 1 week in. Let's just have a little bit of a woo sign. Let's check in as the Royals have played their first six games of the season with one of our favorite guests, friend of the show. Jacob, how you doing today, my man?
I'm doing well. I'm finally out of my winter hibernation and here to talk some Royals baseball, baby.
So let's just start with this, Jacob, and maybe this is just too premature to feel because we have only seen 1 week. The Royals just seem very similar to last year. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but this team just seems like all of the things that I liked about last year's team and why they made the postseason, those things are still there. You've still got that core foundation. You added Jonathan India. You then look at the rotation. I think the rotation has been good the first time through. But then you look at the same question marks that you had with the offense last year, maybe some of the same question marks that you had about the bullpen last year. All of those things still exist. They just feel like they're the same that they were in, let's say, August 15th or so.
I mean, like, that's kind of what the results have been so far. I mean, you go back to early season just last year, and they started out the season 2-4 again before they came back home for another homestand. It's a lot of the issues that Royals fans were talking about this offseason, unfortunately, have come to fruition. You know, you talk about some of the same issues. The outfield producing at the plate has been one of the biggest issues that everyone was banging the table. Hey, we want some big splashy acquisition. We want just something new, some legitimate competition. And unfortunately right now, it's that internal improvement that we were hoping for from MJ Melendez or that bounce back here from Hunter Renfro that hasn't really happened. And it's frustrating. You go look at some of the numbers, the outfield as a whole, even including what Michael Garcia has done at the plate, is 30% worse than league average. Okay, and Michael Garcia is the hottest player on this team right now, and even he can't save the entire position group. So it's a pretty frustrating time to watch them. They're 2-4, but like you said, C-Dot, we got to take a woosah real quick, right?
Yeah, no, we absolutely have to take a woosah. Let's expound a little bit more when it comes to the outfield. I mean, that's what I think the biggest problem with the Royals is right now is I understand that their core four is not carrying them offensively, but you expect Bobby Witt to be better offensively than what he's been. Salvador Perez, Vinny, I'm not worried about those guys. It is the fact that all of us could see some of the pitfalls that they had when it came to the offense and the production for their outfield, and at least so far through the first week of the season, everybody that I had questions about in the offseason, when it comes to the outfield, those questions still exist and they don't look much different. We spent all offseason talking about MJ Melendez's swing and how this year was going to be different. It don't look that different to me.
Listen, the swing, I had a breakdown on Kings of Kauffman about this. Baseball Savant has some new metrics out that show how much it's changed, but the fact that remains is the results haven't changed at all. Andy Rogers of MLB.com had a great breakdown earlier today of how Michael Garcia an unheralded mechanics change this offseason has really paid off for him so far in his hot start. But fans aren't paying attention to that because, you know, we've seen a hot start from Garcia before, and he kind of fell off a cliff last year, and unfortunately we just don't have that long-term trust in it. But yeah, MJ Melendez has not looked too sharp at all. Hunter Renfroe hasn't looked sharp at the plate or in the field. I am worried about him because his calling card over his MLB career is the fact that he has a cannon of an arm there in right field. All the numbers so far show that he is nowhere close to the power that he had in right field. We saw that in the homestand, and it's very concerning that if they can't be great at one thing, then they're really going to hold this team back even more so than they did in 2024. It's Royals fans do have a lot of leeway, even in the early season, to be frustrated about this outfield situation, I would say.
Right now, we're talking to Jacob Milham with Kings of Kauffman. The Royals have an off day. We're 1 week into the baseball season. Which one of those two players are you more worried about? Is it Hunter Renfroe or MJ Melendez?
Right now, I'm more worried about Hunter Renfroe. It is the Royals have a good amount of money, not a ton of money, but in comparison to the rest of their payroll, they have a good amount of money tied up in Hunter Renfroe. And I'm just not seeing any of the calling cards that we've seen from him in previous years. You know, he had a lot of extra base hits before he came to Kansas City. That power hasn't come to fruition at all. I get it. He had that really hot month and a half in 2024, but just think of how good he was in that stretch. And he was still bad across the entire season. MJ Melendez, I'm not as worried about because unfortunately he has minor league options remaining. If it gets, I don't want to say if it gets much worse because unfortunately it can't, at least I would trust the Royals to send MJ to Omaha to keep, you know, hey, if you need to get these mechanics down, it's fine. Just don't hold back the major league club while you're doing it. So I am more worried about Renfroe though, C-Dot.
I was just going to ask you, what are the options if the Royals decide to move on from Hunter Renfroe? So let's say 45 days from now, the things have not really changed from Hunter Renfroe. You're not seeing the arm that you're talking about. You're not seeing the production in the plate as well that you want to see. Where are they going? Are they going to Drew Waters? Are they going somewhere else?
Well, in the short term, you know, I would hope that they would look at going to Mark Canha. You know, this is why you go out and you acquire him for this other outfield option. But yeah, I mean, Drew Waters, he's back in the news. He had the first cycle of the minor league season this year, in Omaha. So good on him. Tyler Gentry is another guy that's on the 40 man that is kind of deserving of an extended run on the major league roster, but also Joey Weimer, who the Royals got in the Jonathan India trade. He has shown some good pop at the plate so far this year and could be ready to make that jump. But also, it's, you know, this is what Royals fans should be hoping for because we've heard everything from Jack Caglione will make his debut by Memorial Day to mid-August, something like that. Right now, he is going to start off the season as a first baseman. I think that if the Royals are really worried about their current outfield situation, they would look at shifting Caglione to get some more outfield reps sooner rather than later. So please keep an eye on that down in Double-A. And outside of that, there's like no clear savior. You know, if the Boston Red Sox, for example, they got Roman Anthony waiting on the farm if something goes wrong with the outfield. The Royals don't have that top prospect that is surefire, ready to go, going to make things better for the big league club. And that's a little scary. I'm not going to lie, C-Dot.
If I had to ask you to look inside your crystal ball and give me a percentage chance that you think Jack Caglione plays for the Royals in 2025, let's say before the All-Star break, just because there is always a chance that he is a September call-up, and I think that's a little bit different in how we kind of discuss it. Let's go before the All-Star break. What percentage would you give it?
I would give it before the All-Star break. I'd give it about 35%. You know, at the end of the day, he does only have half a season of professional ball under his belt, and he is starting off the season at Double-A Northwest Arkansas. Now, I have my reasons for thinking, hey, they are sending him there because he's going to face higher-tier talent than he would at AAA. But also, the Royals, even with how great Bobby Witt Jr. was, they slow rolled him a little bit. So I would expect to see him this season. Like, I would give it about 95% certain that he debuts this season. But before the All-Star break is where you get a little dicey.
Right now, we're talking to Jacob Milham. He is with Kings of Kauffman. Just taking a closer look at the Royals as we are 1 week into the season. What's been your biggest sign of optimism so far with this club?
The biggest sign of optimism so far has been, honestly, Jonathan India. It's the leadoff situation last year was so bleak, so dire. And I did some exercises this offseason to see how many runs, how many wins the Royals left out there just because the leadoff man at points was almost an automatic out and losing out on those runs scored ahead of Bobby Witt Jr. and things like that. But Jonathan India has showed that when the guys behind him are producing, well, he can come across home plate and he can at least get on base to do that damage. And I am enjoying that Cotrero, manager Matt Cotrero, is keeping him in the lineup no matter his position. We've seen some of him at third base. We've seen a little bit of him in left field. But I'm very optimistic about Jonathan India, and I hope that he has a monster season in Kansas City.
This team, I went back to last year. In their last 30 games, they have scored 88 runs. If you had to attribute the biggest why to that, what would the answer be?
Man, I mean, that's pretty anemic in this.
It's bad. It's bad, for sure.
That ain't good. Okay, so for the last 30 games, I would attribute a good bit of that to Vinny Pasquantino. I know Vinny's been here for these first six games of the season, but if you go back to how they looked last year without Vinny after he broke his thumb against the Houston Astros, they surprisingly went from one of the best run-scoring teams in the AL to one of the worst in all of Major League Baseball. I think they went from fourth in runs per game in the AL and then down to 29th. In runs per game on the MLB scale. So he has a huge part in this offense. And I know he hasn't been perfect either. You talk about the core four. I mean, all of those guys, we got so used to seeing them produce at elite levels, and all of them are producing at above average levels. But now we know what happens when they're not truly carrying the entire team on their back. So I don't know. It's a little scary, C-Dot.
We'll move to pitching here in a bit, but let's close out at least our conversation about the offense. We hadn't talked about the other outfielder yet in Kyle Isbell. What are you seeing from him early on this season?
So Kyle Isbell, I'm one of the minorities in this. Kyle Isbell is one of those guys that I love the Royals having. He's one of those guys that, okay, sure, he's going to bat ninth in the lineup, he's not going to give you much to play, but he redeems himself in the field, and especially in Kauffman Stadium, that matters the most. I'm not going to say like I'm not seeing anything good from him, but I'm not seeing anything great from him so far. And I do think it speaks volumes that the Royals felt like they couldn't trust Isbell to be their everyday center fielder anymore. You know, now you have Michael Garcia getting a little bit of work out there. Maybe we'll see a true platoon between him and Isbell when the matchups deem it worthy. I still think he's going to be an above replacement level player. I just don't think Royals fans should expect him to find that value at the plate.
Jacob, if you had to ask me what's been the most encouraging sign about the Royals so far in the first week of the season, my answer would be Chris Bubich, where at least with this team, if you look at their big three in the rotation, Cole Reagans is one of the best pitchers in baseball. Seth Lugo looks like he's continuing being an all-star. Michael Wacha, a guy you obviously feel really good about, that so much of this rotation to me comes down to either Bubich or Michael Lorenzen. Both of them look very good so far in this season, and Bubich, a guy who didn't get a lot of starts last year, who has battled with injuries. If you're going to get a good version of him, we're talking about maybe the best rotation in the American League.
Yeah, I think that is an entirely worthy conversation, FC.Dot, even at this point. Michael Lorenzen, he was just pitching great against the Brewers ahead of that final inning of work where he got a little shaky, you know, some of the early season fatigue, if you will, on the arm. Chris Bubich just, he had a gem of a game. Six shutout innings, eight strikeouts. the win for the Kansas City Royals. I mean, he has just been everything that Royals fans should have hoped for. And the crazy thing is, right now, he's the team's number four starter. And just this rotation is so deep right now that you can trust guys like Cole Reagans and Seth Lugo and Michael Walker are going to bounce back and have an overall good or great season like they like those top two did last year. But if Chris Bubich and Michael Lorenzen are solidly above average or good in their own right, then, yeah, this rotation is going to carry the Royals even further, just like they did last year, C-Dot.
Let's move from the rotation to the bullpen. What have you seen so far in the first week?
Listen, I think a lot of Royals fans owe Hunter Harvey an apology. I will say that, you know, there was the newcomer to the franchise last year did not get a lot of action before he was shut down with injury. There was some talk about, well, the Royals should non-tender him because he looked so bad last year. Now his full pitcher arsenal is working. Now we see what he can do when he is fully healthy. He is looking like that elite setup man that he was with the Washington Nationals. And it's crazy to think what the back three looked like for Kansas City at this time last year. You know, it was Will Smith, James MacArthur, and Chris Stratton. Now we come into it, and it's Hunter Harvey, Lucas Erceg, and Carlos Estevez. Like, that is just night and day difference. And I'm loving what we're seeing from Harvey. His splitter is nasty, and he sets it up very well with high velocity on that four-seam fastball. So I'm hopeful that he keeps this going and it's not just a flash in the pan.
Right now, we're talking to Jacob Milham for a couple of more minutes here, just getting his thoughts on what is happening right now with the Royals and in baseball. All right, I have to get your opinion on this. Everybody in baseball is talking about it. These new torpedo bats that are taking the world by storm. What's your take on the torpedo bats?
I probably have one of the least sexy takes about it out there, C-Dot. But you know what? I don't hate them. I don't. I really don't. Ever since the Moneyball revolution that came to baseball, the more diehard fans have been looking for, what is that new margin that teams are going to exploit that is going to win them 2, 3, 4 more games? And you know what? These custom bats that are still within MLB rules, that's been clarified just so many times now. And it's crazy how quickly they've caught on with other major league players. But I think it is worth noting that just because a player holds a torpedo bat in their hand doesn't instantly make them the best version of themselves. Okay, they still have to have good plate discipline and solid mechanics. It is just amplifying their specific swing profile a little bit more. And you know what, C-Dot? I know we don't have a whole lot of home runs there in Kauffman Stadium, but I like high-scoring affairs. That's just kind of how I am as a baseball fan, you know?
Yeah, my take on the torpedo bats is very simple. This is just a natural evolution in sports. The gloves in the NFL have gotten better over time. Mm-hmm. That the gloves that Jerry Rice were using and the gloves that Tyreek Hill are using are not the same gloves, but you still got to go out there and you got to make the catch. If you look at the evolution in golf, the golf balls are different now than they were 25 years ago. The golf clubs are different 25 years ago than they are today. That we've always embraced technology inside of sports. That's what this is like. You just made a good point there. We're not talking about circumventing the rules. We are talking about taking the rules that Major League Baseball has, and we are just redistributing the weight and wood on the bat. That's not illegal. I'm all for the torpedo bats, and I just want to see how they work long term to get a bigger sample size than we currently have.
Yeah, and we're still figuring out like who is actually going to start using these torpedo bats. It went from the Yankees to a handful of teams pretty quickly. I think it'll be very interesting to see how seriously Major League Baseball takes this. I don't know if this is something that they want to stop teams from doing, though. I mean, this is just part of the gamesmanship that is baseball, I think.
That is our guy, Jacob Milham, joining us on the show today. He covers the Royals for Kings of Kauffman. Be sure to check out their website. It is one of the best websites out there about the Kansas City Royals. Jacob, great stuff as always, man. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, C-Dot. I'll talk to you later.
Absolutely. That is Jacob Milham joining us on the show today. Really good stuff from him. Just catching you guys up with the Kansas City Royals and where we are. I mean, my stance on the torpedo bat is just, it's very, very simple. This is sports. This is technology. We use technology to improve our lives and, for the most part, make things easier. Now, I don't think this is cheating by any means. The bat weighs what it's supposed to weigh. The diameter is what it's supposed to be. The length of the bat. All we have done is simply reimagine the bat. All we've done is move the wood from one part of the bat to another part of the bat. That's not cheating, in my opinion. We have reimagined something, and now this is the offense's ability to try to stay ahead of the pitching and try to stay ahead of the defense, and now the defense will adjust. I don't have an issue with it. I do feel like some of the hype around it is potentially dying down a little bit. It was really big early on in the beginning of the week. It does feel like it is dying down just a bit, but I find this to be a very interesting story about what is happening with Major League Baseball. JT, I'll get your thoughts. We are 1 week into baseball with the Kansas City Royals. How are you feeling? Where are you at with the boys in blue?
I'm not too worried about them. I saw a thing last night. It was like, hey, the Royals started the season, same record as last year, went home, won seven straight. Weird enough, they come home, they have seven straight home games. They won all seven last year. I'm not expecting them to win seven straight at home this year, but I think we all just got to take a chill. Remember, it's a marathon in a sense. This isn't a sprint. It's a marathon. You're gonna run into some streaks. I thought the schedule was really hard to begin the season, so I'm not too worried about it. I think they're gonna be fine. The bullpen has really looked good. The outfield, like we talked about, has been the sus part. We all had questions about it, and it's come to fruition for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you are a Royals fan and you're a little bit upset, frustrated about the way that the Royals have started, I'm not here to tell you that you should or shouldn't be, just where we are. It is important to note there are five teams in the American League Central. All five of those teams have the exact same record. So as frustrated and disappointed as you could potentially feel about this team, I just want you to note that Minnesota fans feel the exact same way about their team today. The Detroit Tigers, they feel the exact same. Like, they are quite literally the same as the Royals. The Royals are -2 in run differential. The Tigers are -3 in run differential. They have been the exact same team through the first week of the baseball season. The Guardians, who won their division last year, they're also 2-4 on the season. They have a -9 run differential. So I want the Royals to get off to a better start. I imagine you wanted the Royals to get off to a better start. If the Royals had won either on Sunday or yesterday and just won one of those two series, you know what, right now? The Royals would be over 500, or they'd be at 500, excuse me, and they would be in first place in their division. Right now, they're tied for first place in their division. So I've seen some things. I think there are reasons to be optimistic about the Royals. I've seen some things that give you a little bit of pause and cause for concern with the Royals. It's early. It's 1 week. It's no reason to get too high. It's no reason to get too low on the Kansas City Royals. Everything is going to work out with the hometown team and the boys in blue. Let's do this. Let's take a little bit of a break here. Coming up on the other side, let's switch gears just a little bit. We'll talk a little bit of NFL draft. We are, what, 3 weeks away from the start of the NFL draft? 3 weeks away from the start of the NFL draft. Matt Miller, friend of the show, he was on Kay Adams' show earlier today. I'll play for you some of what he had to say. Is I think the top five in the draft is really starting to become a more clear picture. I'll explain. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan. I want to read this text to you guys very quickly. CDOT, 6 games is 4% of the baseball season. Reacting to this start for the Royals is like reacting to the Chiefs City season midway through the third quarter of the first game. I understand the comparison. This is the point I would make. At least when it comes to a handful of individuals. I told you guys yesterday, I'm not spending any time. Are you guys worried about the slow start from Bobby Witt Jr.? That's a waste of my time and your time. Are you guys worried about Salvador Perez? No, he's going to Cooperstown someday. The only reason I think that you can maybe be a little bit worried about the Royals is this. And you guys know what I'm about to say is true. If they threw the ball to Sky Moore in the third quarter of the game and he dropped it, you guys wouldn't be like, oh, it's early. Oh, you no. You guys would be on their head about that. Understandably so. Understandably so. I saw Carson Steele, who you guys loved all August. He fumbled one time. Hey, get his ass out of here. We need somebody else. Let's not do that. If I'm looking at MJ Melendez and you already came into the season on thin ice, my boy, you already came into it on thin ice. You hit 2-something last year. In the postseason, you hit 150. All right, man. Hey, you got to clean it up. You got to get things together. All right, man, I'm working on it. And I think he worked on it. Hey, he got his swing. He was tearing the cover off the ball in spring training. They were telling me that this year was going to be different with MJ Melendez. Hey, I was listening. I didn't come into it with the, hey, all right, cool. You telling me it's going to be a little different, all right? I'm telling you right now, when MJ Melendez is 15 plate appearances and 13 at-bats, he has one hit. He is hitting .077. So I'm with you. I don't want to overreact to the Royals in their early start. But you and I both know, if they threw the ball to Sky Moore in the second quarter of night one and he dropped it, you guys wouldn't be like, ah, it's early. Come on, guys. I mean, he's going to get – no, not when it comes to MJ. Not when it comes to Hunter Renfroe. Those two guys, I don't think they get the same leash. I don't think you've earned the leash. Hunter Renfroe has been a bad deal from the Royals since the ink dried. He was bad last year for the Royals. It's continued. MJ Melendez, the bat has suffered this entire time. I'm willing to give Salvi the benefit of the doubt. I'm willing to give Vinny Pasquantino the benefit of the doubt. Bobby Witt Jr., sure, I'm willing to give those players. I don't know what MJ has done to get the benefit of the doubt. I don't know what Hunter Renfroe has done in a Royals jersey to get the benefit of the doubt. I don't know if you can be too reactionary on those players. They look like what they've been giving you the entire time, which has been disappointment. So that's where I think the analogy falls a little bit apart. That's where I think it falls a little bit of apart.
The only way I would argue with you is last year, Hunter Renfroe actually played defense well at a high level. So far this year, he's been abysmal. He's been reading the ball wrong, and his throws at home have been off by a wide margin. So that's the only thing I would argue with you about Hunter Renfroe.
All right, let's switch topics a little bit, and let's talk some NFL draft. The NFL draft is right around the corner. We're talking 3 weeks away from the NFL draft. Let's start with Matt Miller, friend of the show. Matt Miller does fantastic work for ESPN. He was on Kay Adams' show, Up and Adams, and he thinks there is a sleeper prospect who could go top five. Listen to this.
Who's the person, the prospect, that I'm not hearing much about? Not on my algorithm, not on my Explore page, that the week of draft is going to have shot up boards?
Well, I'm not just saying this for our buddy Matt Hamilton, but I think it's Armon Membo. And we saw him at the Mizzou Pro Day. He didn't work out, but he is going to go so much earlier. Like, I do not be surprised if he's the fourth pick in the draft. If Shedeur Sanders doesn't go in the top four, Armon Membo could go four to the Patriots. Now, that means Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter are gone. But if that happens, if it goes Cam Ward, Abdul Carter, Travis Hunter, Armon Membo could be the fourth pick in this draft.
Right now you have him going seventh overall. You have the Jets taking him. I love that. You also have, I thought interesting, 26th overall, the Rams taking their heir apparent at quarterback, Mr. Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin, Jackson Dart. Love that.
All right. Now, maybe I just have to evolve in positional value and how things have changed. And maybe we are getting to the point where teams don't see a drastic difference in left tackle or right tackle. And if you think that you can get a franchise right tackle, you take them. In a draft that maybe you don't love all of the high talent. Maybe I got to accept that. And I love Armon Membo, M-I-Z, from the town. I'm here to support him. He played right tackle in college. That guy's now a top five pick in the NFL draft. Like, maybe just my positional value brain that maybe it's broken right now. I would not spend a top five pick on a guy that primarily played right tackle. Now, maybe you think that you can move him over to left tackle. And if he could move over to left tackle, I actually think he might be the number two overall pick in this year's draft. And maybe Cleveland would end up taking him. But for a guy that doesn't have a lot of experience playing left tackle, I am a little bit surprised that a right tackle is now the hot rumor is that he's going to go top five in the draft. if I'm the Jets in this analogy, or I'm the team that's picking fourth overall, I'm moving back in the draft then. I'm trying to pick up some assets. Hey, if you've fallen in love with this offensive lineman, we're going to try to go get some better positional value a little bit later in the draft, and we're going to try to pick up a future first-round pick or a second-round pick. Now, I'm all for. I want to see him get it go as high as you can go. The positional value to me just doesn't seem to be there if I was a team that was selecting. I'm not taking a right tackle with the fourth overall pick. Another player who is moving up draft boards, and I knew this was going to happen. Now, this is way higher than I thought it was going to go. But we've spent a lot of time talking about Cam Ward. We know where he's going to go. Shedeur is also going to be drafted in the first round. Now, I don't know where in the first round. You could convince me that Shedeur can go anywhere. You could convince me that Cleveland this whole time has been lying to us and Cleveland's taking him with the number two overall pick. It also wouldn't surprise me if Shedeur's Jordan Love or Aaron Rodgers and falls to the mid-first round. Anything is possible in my mind. But listen to who Matt Miller believes is moving up draft boards. Listen to this name.
The rumor mill. It seems a little like lackluster right now. Maybe it's too early. It's a little bleak. If you could be the odds maker for NFL draft trade rumors, draft rumors, what would you make the favorite? Like, what might actually happen? Yes.
I think Jackson Dart going in the top 10 is the hot one. And you're right. It's been quiet. As someone who loves draft rumors, it's been quiet. I think it's because we don't have the big quarterbacks this year. But Jackson Dart going in the top 10, and that might be the Saints at 9. It might be a team trading up. That's the one that I'm trying to get the most intel on right now, because the buzz on him has just been building. And I will be the first to admit there have been buzz on players in the past that fizzled out by the time we got to draft weekend. You know, Mac Jones going number 3 was the big buzz not that long ago, and he didn't go until 15. So with Jackson Dart, we'll see. But it's definitely trending in the direction that he's going to go much earlier than we all thought when the season ended.
The quarterbacks always do. Death taxes, and everyone thinks the quarterbacks are going to slide.
All right. I watched a lot of SEC football last year. The fact that Jackson Dart could be a top 10 pick in the NFL draft is blowing my mind. I cannot believe this. Now, if we were having the conversation about him being a late first round pick, you could sell me on it, because I understand you want to get things right. 10 seems way too high for me as a prospect, but okay. I'm actually a little surprised by this. A little surprised by this. Because right now I pulled up his NFL draft profile. And his prospect grade is good backup with the potential to develop into a starter. And the conversation is now that he could go top 10. You want to know where Jackson Dart makes a lot of sense? Pittsburgh. If you're Pittsburgh and you have a plan to get the veteran with Aaron Rodgers, and I think we know that Aaron Rodgers is not going to be the quarterback for a long period of time for the Jets, I don't think that having Jackson Dart there, kind of sit behind Aaron Rodgers, learn, observe, study film, do whatever you need to do, and next season Jackson Dart takes over for you as you use a mid-first-round draft pick to go get your QB, I don't think that's the worst idea in the world if you are Pittsburgh. If you're the Saints and you got a top 10 pick, that just seems like an incredibly high reach. Now, we'll say about quarterback, no one cares if you reach. No one cares if you reach. They only care if you get it right or wrong. So if you draft Jackson Dart with the 10th overall pick, it doesn't matter what radio host says. You go out there and you ball out, and let's say you turn into Kirk Cousins, for example. Yes, you would spend the 10th overall pick on Kirk Cousins if that's what you think Jackson Dart's going to be. And maybe that's how the league perceives him to be. I didn't see elite-level quarterback in college, not at Ole Miss. I saw a guy that, I agree with this, good backup with the potential to develop into a starter. I think that's fair. Now, maybe the league is saying this. I never saw it with Will Levis. I don't know what they were talking about when they kept telling me that Will Levis was going to be. Remember, at one point, people thought Will Levis could go fourth in the draft. People thought Will Levis was going to be a first-round pick. And then I think more teams started watching the film and came to the conclusion that I came to, that guy ain't a high-level starter in the league. Now, I do think that Jackson Dart is a better prospect than Will Levis is. Is he now worthy of using the 9th overall pick on? I think this draft is very, very interesting. There are, I would say, three or four elite-level prospects at the top of this draft class. And then after that, I would say it is anybody's guess. You're listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. I have an observation about the sports that we watch. I'll tell you what it is. Keep it right here. It's The Drive. Welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Thursday. All right, a couple of things, and we'll get back to the Royals coming up at the top of the hour. The first thing is that I've noticed, and this seems to be a unique basketball thing. The old players don't seem to think that any of the new players could compete in their era. A couple of days ago on First Take, they were talking basketball, and Stephen A. Smith says that he talked to an former NBA player, and that former NBA player told him that there was no way that Steph Curry would average 17 points or more in their NBA because it was too physical. Now, I don't know who this player was that told Stephen A. Smith this, but let's at least discuss this part. This is the thing that kills me about the past generations whenever we have this conversation. And I don't want to be the young guy that is trying to, no, I don't want to do that. In the same NBA that they are telling me that Steph Curry couldn't compete in, there was a 5-year stretch in which Spud Webb averaged double digits. Yes, Spud Webb at 5'6", 133 pounds. You are telling me that Spud Webb, during the same era that Michael Jordan was playing, from 1990 until 1995, averaged 12 points a night. One of those years, he averaged 17 points a night playing in 77 NBA games. You're telling me Steph Curry couldn't compete during that era? That's what you guys want me to believe? Why do you guys do this? Now, on the flip side, modern day current NBA players, I also think that you're wrong. LeBron James, a couple of weeks ago when he was on the Pat McAfee show, he said that Giannis would average 200 points back in the 70s. All right. Can we all just calm down a little bit? I don't know what's going on in the NBA right now. Yes, Steph Curry, who can shoot, would work in any era. Have you seen his handle? Sometimes these past NBA players, they make it seem like, they make it seem like playing in the NBA in 1993 was life and death. Like they were playing San Quentin level basketball at every single NBA game. We were alive. We have film. Yes, sure. You guys fouled Jordan a lot. And yes, the bad boy Pistons. Every NBA game was not like this. If you're telling me a league that Spud Webb could average 17 points a night, that's a league that Steph Curry can find his footing. And the current NBA players, stop it. Giannis would average 200 points. Why do we have to do this? The game has changed, but the old guys, they can hoop, and these young guys, they can hoop too. They can hoop too. They're different. Both of you are being silly. I was thinking this, actually. It's a basketball and a baseball topic. For two games that were created by Americans, that are America's pastime. I know that baseball calls itself America's pastime. I think you could argue in a lot of ways it's basketball. Basketball was invented in America, and it is a part of the curriculum at every single school. Every school has a basketball gym. A lot of parks. Basketball is all around us. We love basketball. Right now, if you are looking at it, baseball's greatest player is from Japan. Baseball's best player is not from America. There have not been too many times, I would say, in baseball's history, and there's been some years, where you could say that the best player in baseball was not an American-born player. There's not been a whole lot of times that has been the case, that you have been able to say that. You can say that right now pretty definitively, that it is not an American-born player. There also, I don't know if there has been an era in basketball history before the last 5 years that you have been able to say that the best basketball player in the world was not from America. I mean, right now it's Nikola Jokic. For a time there, Giannis certainly had a claim to being the best basketball player in the world. There have not been too many times in either sport's history that you have been able to say that. Right now, it is clear who the best baseball player is. Shohei looks like somebody who was created in a lab to dominate baseball. Every night you look up, he's hitting a home run or doing something magical. And oh yeah, he can pitch too. And he wasn't just like okay at pitching. No, he was one of the best at pitching. And then he could turn around and hit 50 home runs if you need to and have 130 RBIs and help lead your team to the World Series like he did last year. You look at basketball, it has become truly the most global game that we have. Look at the All-Star game. Look at the court. You got dominant players from Canada. You got dominant players from Serbia. You got dominant players from all around Greece, all around the world. This is a very, very unique time in American sports history that you can say that for two games that were born, bred, created right here in America, that at least for a period, the best player in those respective sports are not from America. Another thing that I noticed watching Shohei Ohtani, that I know that fans want loyalty. And I get it, right? You want to see one guy wear one uniform for their entire career. The best thing that Shohei Ohtani ever did in his life was get as far away from Anaheim, California. It was the best thing that could have happened to us. It was the best thing that could have happened to him. He looked happy. I can tell he hitting those parlays now. He just is smiling. He looked happy. He didn't look happy there at the end with the Angels. And I get it. Why would you be happy playing for the Los Angeles Angels despite having two of the greatest baseball players who have ever lived? All the Angels have done have been mid for the last 10 years. That's all they've done. It's just be incredibly average. The last time that the Angels won more than 81 games, the last time they were over 500 was in 2015. It was a decade ago. How have you had Mike Trout, Albert Pujols, and you had Shohei Ohtani, and you don't even got a division crown? They only finished higher than third one of those years in the last decade. I understand that these guys want to be loyal and true. Hey, man, sometimes you got to be Kevin Garnett. I did everything I was supposed to do. I was great here in Minnesota. I'm tired of losing. I want to go play for the Celtics. You left the Timberwolves. You went to the Celtics. Anything was possible. Shohei, I'm sure you wanted to stay in Anaheim. I mean, Disneyland, Disney World, whichever one it is. Not that far away, right around the corner in Los Angeles. Hey, man, I don't want to be here no more. I mean, I still want to be in Los Angeles. I just don't want to play for you guys anymore. Sometimes you got to leave, man. Sometimes you got to leave. That job that you've been working at for 12 years, hey, man, you know when it's time. It might not be time right now. Maybe you still love being there. Hey, man, you'll know when it's time. I'm for it. Sometimes you got to go. Sometimes you got to do something different. And Shohei looked up one day, and he looked around and said, hey, I'm not playing for this team no more. They stink. They're terrible. I'm the greatest baseball player to ever live. We won 73 games when I was here. I don't want to play for these guys anymore. I don't have any interest. Hey, I want to go play with winners. That's what Shohei said. I want to go play for winners. And he did it. Things seem to be working out very well for Shohei Ohtani. All right, coming up at the top of the hour, let's talk some Royals baseball. We are 1 week into the season. Keep it right here, Sadrive.